Today, I want to talk about trust. 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 Trust not between you and God, but trust relationally. Trust in your home. Trust at work. Trust with your friends, and maybe even trust with the government. I want to talk about this incredible, incredible thing called trust. It's very misunderstood. And in fact, the verses that we're going to look at today, when you read these, they're the kind of verses you read through real quick and you keep going. We're going to slow down because in these four little phrases, the Apostle Paul draws us to this extremely, extremely, extremely important idea of and value of trust. And what we all know experientially is this, that your relationships, whether at home, at work, wherever, your relationships are no stronger than the amount of trust that you have in those relationships. That trust is the bedrock of relationship. In fact, when we came up with this idea for this series, we wanted one of the messages to be relational. And as we talked about it, we all agreed, you know what? If you can't trust, and if you don't know how to trust, and if you're not willing to take some risk when it comes to trust, you will never, ever, ever fully engage relationally, and there will always be something lacking. So today we're going to talk about trust. Before we look at the passage, one other kind of precursor. Here, think about this, and we're going to circle back around to this at the end. There's two things that make it hard for you to trust. What you see and who you are. What you see and who you are. Somebody said they're going to do something. They didn't do it. I saw them not do it. I saw that they didn't do it. I experienced that they didn't follow through. They didn't keep their promise. When I see that, it makes it hard for me to trust. And that's the easy part. But there's another thing that makes it hard to trust, and that's who you are. Because you grew up in some kind of home. You had a bad experience with an ex-husband or an ex-wife. You had a bad experience with a father-in-law or a stepfather or a stepmother. You had a bad experience in your former occupation or the former company that you worked for. You had some bad experiences. And what happens is over time, something happens to you and something happens in your heart. And you learn not to trust. And so this very, very specific life app is more difficult for you because in general, you have a hard time trusting. But as a Christian, we are instructed, as we're going to see, to stretch and to bend and to learn to trust. Now, if you have your Bibles and want to follow along, we're in one of the most famous chapters in the entire Bible, 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13 is sometimes referred to as the what chapter? The love chapter. That's right. If you had a wedding in a Christian church, it's very possible that somebody either read part of or all of 1 Corinthians chapter 13. In fact, you may have asked the pastor, hey, would you read 1 Corinthians chapter 13 if you can remember anything that was actually said at your wedding? It's a little bit of a blur sometimes. Now, in 1 Corinthians 13, the Apostle Paul discusses love, and he does his best to explain what love is. And, you know, I want to know what love is. Don't you? Don't you want to know what love is? Anybody remember that song? Yeah, I want to know what love is. Okay. And so he says, I'm going to tell you. And so instead of just giving us a sentence, he gives us a description. And here's what's so cool. At the very end, it's as if he bumps into this issue of trust. And he thinks to himself, how do I say this? How do I say this? Because this isn't going to go well. People are going to think, huh, this sounds too extreme. How do I say this? So I want to read you the verses leading up to the big when it comes to trust. Here we go. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Love, and this is kind of, most of this is kind of, yeah, we know. Love is patient, yeah, okay. Love is kind, right? It does not envy, okay. It does not boast, all right. It is not proud, okay, it's not proud. It does not dishonor others, well, of course, you know, everybody knows that, he goes on. It is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered. Love keeps no record of wrongs. Oh. Because some of you are married to people with a file cabinet, right? It's like, excuse me. Oh, yeah, May 13th, 1992. Do you remember? Okay, but real love keeps no, doesn't have a file cabinet, doesn't even have a 3x5 card. Love, real love, keeps no record of wrongs. We should apparently come back and talk about that at some point. Love, now listen, now he's starting to focus in on his big idea. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Now, he's not talking about evil in general and truth in general. Again, it's like it's hard to put this into words. Love does not delight evil, but rejoices in truth. You know what that means? That means that love isn't trying to catch somebody doing something wrong. Aha, I knew it. I knew you were going to do that. I knew you were going to be late. I knew you were going to mess up the budget. I knew you weren't going to give me credit for that. I knew it. Aha. I'm just waiting to catch you doing the wrong thing. He says, that's not how love operates. Love is looking for an opportunity to catch people doing the right thing. And then it's as if Paul, you know, stops and goes, okay, that says it, but that doesn't quite say it. And then he gives us four quick phrases that all are pointing to the one idea of trust. Here's how he writes it. It, talking about love, it always protects, always. It always trusts, there's our word, always. It always hopes, wait a minute, always, it always perseveres. Okay, you say, well, okay, always, I mean, isn't that kind of extreme? And Paul's going, yes, if you think it's extreme, you understand what I'm trying to say about love. Love bends, love leans into. Love is always looking for an opportunity to give the other person the benefit of the doubt. So consequently, it's always trying to protect the integrity of the relationship, even if you have to do a lot of the work. It's always trusting. I'm just going to do everything I can possibly do to trust. Always hopes. I'm not giving up, not giving up, not giving up. And it always just perseveres. I'm just going to bend in your direction. The New American Standard says it this way. Here's another translation. It bears all things, it believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Now, let me give you three statements to kind of summarize this whole idea, and then I want us to talk specifically about how this relates to us. Here's what Paul's saying about trust. Love, or love as it relates to trust, love gives the other person the benefit of the doubt. That's what love does. Love, when there's a dilemma, when there's a discrepancy between what's promised and what actually happens, love gives the other person the benefit of the doubt. Second statement is this. Love looks for the most, and I love this word, love looks for the most generous. Love looks for the most generous explanation for the other person's behavior. All of a sudden, there's a gap. We're going to talk about the gap in a minute. There's a gap between what was promised and what actually happened. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at this gap. My kids said this, but they did this. My husband said this, but he did this. My boss said this, but he did this. And I'm going to put something in the gap. And love says, you know what? Before I jump to conclusions, what are some other possibilities? Love looks for a generous explanation. The third statement is this. Love chooses trust over suspicion. Love chooses trust over suspicion. Now, let me illustrate it this way. We talked about this when we did the Staying in Love series. But in the Staying in Love series, we talked specifically about marriage. But this principle applies to all relationships everywhere. And I don't know a better way to illustrate it. Here's how it looks. In every relationship, there are expectations, whether it's at work, with our government, at home, in the neighborhood association, if you coach Little League, if you're in a fraternity, a sorority, a club, a team, there's always expectations. And then there's what we actually experience. Here's what you said you would do. Here's what I experienced that you did. Here's what time you said you'd be home. This is what time you actually got home. Here's what you said about that project. Here's what you did about that project. Here's the list we agreed on. Here's the part of the list you did or didn't do. And sometimes there's a gap. That is, there's a gap between what we expect and what we experience. And if you don't get anything else out of this message, if you can just pause long enough to embrace this simple truth, when there is a gap, we choose what goes in the gap. Here's the key, we decide what goes in the gap. In the midst of the experience, we think, no, we don't decide what goes in the gap. They have decided what goes in the gap because they said 8 o'clock, I hear the garage door opening at 10 o'clock. So they have now forced me to assume the worst. Truth is, they don't control what you put in this gap. That's why the Apostle Paul says, that when it comes to love, when it comes to the bedrock of great relationships, friendships, dating relationships, marriage relationships, work relationships, you need to understand, love bends. Love does everything it can to protect the integrity of that relationship. So love goes out of its way to believe the best because love understands that you, that I, that we choose what goes in this gap. And there are gaps at every level of relationship, aren't they? If you're raising kids, there's some gaps. You have talked about that room being clean 100 times. If you're married, you have talked about the budget 100 times. We all agreed that we're going to do what Pastor Stanley said to do, and we're going to input all of our expenses, aren't we? And everybody said, yeah, we're going to input all our expenses. And now it's not happening. There's a gap, but I thought we said. And you agree that we're only going to spend this much money on clothes. And you agree that we're going to go on this kind of vacation. And you agreed, you know, as a couple, that you're not going to spend any more time with him because you think he's a bad influence on you. Next thing you know, you're playing golf with him. And it's like there's just gaps at home, right? There's gaps at work. Because you both agreed you were going to, you know, present this as it was a joint idea. And next thing you know, somebody's taking credit for your idea. And you agreed on how much you were going to pay. And actually, they wrote you a check for a lot less. You agreed on what the commission would be. As it turns out, they found a loophole. And you're not getting what you expected. And there's a gap in every relationship. There's a gap. Nationally, I mean, you know, it's a sport. You know, talking about politics and, you know, hating the other side is a sort of a national pastime here, right? Because if you're a Republican, you think all the Democrats are idiots. And if you're a Democrat, you think all the Republicans are idiots. And it's like those politicians, you know, those Republicans, those Democrats, those national leadership, the Congress. And when there's a gap between what we expect and what we experience, we choose what we put in the gap. In other words, you have far more power in deciding how this goes than you anticipate. And Paul says, love is always looking for an opportunity to believe the best rather than assume the worst. In fact, do you know what all the research has shown, especially when it comes to marriage? This is huge. Big tip, ready? In healthy relationships, both parties in a healthy relationship, in the best marriages and the best relationships, both parties go to ridiculous extremes to believe the best. That's what all the research shows. That in essence, love is blind. That what Paul said is exactly right. They believe all things. They protect at all costs. They endure all things. Always believes, always trust. Because at the end of the day, there's nothing gained by refusing to trust. There really isn't. Here's why. Let me try to explain this. Suspicion is an expression of rejection. That's what suspicion is. When you feel like I don't trust you anymore and I'm suspicious of everything you're doing and why you sit next to her, why'd you call him, why'd you text him, you know, why didn't you come in my office first, why didn't you tell me about that, you know, why is the room not made up, you know, why? When you feel like I'm suspicious of you, you experience that as rejection. And do you know what we do in relationships where we feel rejected? We do not open up, do we? We close down. You close me. Right. Here's why. God designed you as an acceptance magnet. You are drawn to environments and you are drawn to relationships where you feel accepted. You see that in your kids all the time, and what happened to you when you're in third and fourth grade when you first experienced that, nothing's changed. Suspicion communicates rejection. So consequently, when you choose to, and it's a choice, remember that you're choosing, when you choose to assume the worst, even if you're right, even if you've got a long list of why you should assume the worst, anytime you communicate, I don't trust you, you have taken a step in closing down that relationship. You're no longer protecting at all costs. You're no longer enduring at all costs. You're no longer bending like love bends. It's an extraordinarily, extraordinarily powerful thing to communicate to someone this. And for some of you, you need to have some conversations like this. We'll talk about it in just a minute. It's a powerful thing to look at someone and say, I really want to trust you. That's way better than, you know what, na, 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 and I'm pulling out the file drawer and you did it again. And you may be exactly right. But that's far different than looking at someone and saying, you know what, I really want to trust you. Now, I know what you're thinking. We're going to get there in a minute. You're thinking, yeah, but, you know, if I could come up and tell my sad story real quick, you know, Andy, you wouldn't have a sermon. Okay, it'd be over. Everybody go, ooh, yeah, what do you do about that, you know? If I could tell you about my father-in-law, if I could tell you about my brother-in-law, if I could tell you about family vacation, if I could tell you about my 14-year-old son, you know, we've all got these extreme stories, and I'm going to address that in just a minute, but pause with me before we go there. I just don't want you to lose sight of one thing. No matter how bad this is, no matter how wide the gap is, and no matter how consistently there is a gap, you choose what you put here. Every single time. Nobody has ever forced you to assume the worst. Nobody can do that for you. It is within your power to choose what goes in the gap. And your best chance at restoring and healing and making stronger a relationship, your best shot is always to believe the best. I've never heard anyone say, you know, things at work were so tense. And then he came in and he told me that he doesn't trust me. And boy, things have just been better since then. You know, our marriage, we were just at each other. And finally she said, I don't trust you. And I mean, it just soared after that. I mean, it got more romantic. I mean, it's just awesome. Why? Because when you communicate, even when you deserve to communicate, I don't trust you, you have begun to shut down the relationship, because suspicion and a lack of trust is rejection, and we all flee from rejection. So Paul says, look, I know this sounds extreme. I know this doesn't even sound practical, but even in the most difficult of relationships, bend, do everything in your power to communicate. I trust you. Now, what happens when you can't? I mean, what happens when it's just over and over and over and the gap gets wider and wider and wider and it's just consistently a gap? Now, when I tell you what you're supposed to do, you're not going to write this down because this is so obvious, but it's so obvious and we still don't do it. And that's simply this. When you can't choose to trust, you have to choose to confront. When you can't choose to trust, when it's like, okay, I've bent all I can bent. I'm about to break. I've been feeling like a fool for a long time to put up with this, but now it's... Do you know what Jesus said? In fact, this is so amazing. In Matthew 18 and Matthew 5, but Matthew 18 specifically, this is amazing to me. The only time that I know of that Jesus taught step one, step two, step three, I mean, because life doesn't work that way. There's not like to raise your children, step one. Life's not like that. The only time I think that Jesus ever taught step one, step two, step three was when he addressed the issue of confrontation. When you're going to confront somebody, here's how you do it. Now, Jesus, why would you give such focus to step one, step two, step three in confrontation? Jesus is thinking, because this is a necessary part of relationships. And for there to be healing and for the gap to be closed, there is a point in time where we have to confront. Here's our problem. We don't confront. We gossip. We don't talk to, we talk about. And even if you don't talk about, you have imaginary conversations, right? I told that kid 100 times. Hey, sweetheart, you know. I told my husband if he ever had, and he comes in and you're happy face, let's have dinner. And then we get into this whole thing, you know. What's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? You know why they ask what's wrong? Because when you are suspicious and when you're assuming the worst, that gets telegraphed. What's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? Nothing. And then the earth starts to shake and the sheetrock starts peeling off the walls. What's wrong? What's wrong? And then, boom, I'll tell you what's wrong. And it's like, whoa, I'm sorry I ask, you know? And you know what Jesus taught? You know what common sense says? You know what some of us have learned the hard way? The moment. That there's a gap, have a conversation. The moment there's a gap, have a conversation. And here's how. Confrontation. Ready? Asking for an explanation and assuming there's a good one. I'm not asking you because I don't trust you. I'm just asking you because, I'm assuming the best, but I'm not going to assume the best and make up a story in my mind to explain your behavior. I'm assuming the best. I just want to hear your explanation. I'm sure there is one. You're an hour late. It was an accident. Sick. I'm assuming the best. I'm assuming the best, and I'm asking you for an explanation. That's what confrontation is. I want to know. And you know what you're communicating? You're communicating, I want this door to stay open. I'm going to do everything in my power to keep this door open. I'm believing the best. I'm not going to assume the worst. I'm protecting the relationship. I'm doing everything I can because I'm going to bend. But when I don't know, instead of having imaginary conversations about you and being mad, instead of gossiping, I'm going to confront you. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, oh, Andy, I'm not a confronter. Good news. Here's some good news. Most people aren't. You're in the majority. There's only about 5 or 8% of the world's population that can't wait for confrontation. All right, confrontation. I was born. Okay, listen, the good news is this. If you don't love confrontation, you're going to be better at it. Have you ever been confronted by someone who likes confrontation? How was that a happy time? It's like, because people who love confrontation, they're like bringing 3 witnesses and an attorney, and they got a list, and they got a red pen, and it's so perfect, and it's just like, whoa, I can't do this. So here's the good news. If you're not a confronter, you'll probably handle this perfectly, but you cannot hide behind the fact that you don't like conflict, because if you let the gap stew and simmer and build, it gets bigger, then there's another gap and it's bigger, then there's another gap and it's bigger and it's bigger and it's bigger, and you never confront, and finally something's gonna break and it's gonna be ugly. And so Jesus said, common sense tells us, experience tells us, if you turn it around and you're on the other side, you know, if there is somebody in your world, at work or at home, that is sitting around going, I don't know why, I don't know why, I don't know why, I don't know why, I don't know why. Don't you want them to just ask you why? In fact, isn't it true, come on, that most of the times when we confront people and they give us their explanation, we go, oh yeah, I didn't know that. Well, it's because you hadn't asked. Oh, yeah, I should ask sooner. So, sum it up. In every relationship, expectations. In every relationship, something does or doesn't happen. And in every time there's a gap, we choose what goes in the gap. And Paul says, to this uttermost, bend and believe the best. And when it's just too hard to give a generous explanation, you ask, and you ask quickly, and you ask them, and you go to them directly. Now, most of you, you know, your church experience with us at one of our campuses or even online is this. You know, you come to Sunday morning and you leave. What you don't think about, there's no reason for you to think about it, is that we're an organization. I'm actually a boss. We have employees. We have about 320 or 30 full-time equivalents with all of our campuses. And so we have an organizational culture here, the Monday through Friday part that you don't see. And this is a big deal to us. And every few years, I get the whole staff together and I teach on this subject, because I know this, our organization is no better than the quality of our relationships, and our organization is no better than the trust that we have with each other. So when I begin to teach on this in sort of a corporate setting for our staff, I ask our staff to make 5 commitments. And I want to run through these very quickly. I'm not going to give you time to write them down. We may put them up on a website somewhere if you're interested. But I think these 5 commitments should be reflected in every relationship, in home, at work, and nationally. I mean, this is just kind of bedrock, bottom line stuff when it comes to relationships. But here's how we have expressed this here among the staff. Maybe this will help clarify it. 5 things. Number one, when there's a gap between what I expected and what I experienced, I'm going to believe the best. I'm deciding ahead of time, before I even know what the gap is, I am pre-deciding that when you disappoint me, I am going to give a generous explanation for your behavior. When you disappoint me, when you don't come through, when you said it's 5 and it turned out to be 2, when I said 8 o'clock and you showed up at 9 o'clock, whatever it is, I'm just going to assume, I'm pre-deciding that I'm going to assume the best. Believe the best. Number 2, when other people assume the worst about you, I will come to your defense. Ooh, wouldn't that be awesome? In other words, when you create a gap with somebody else and they're nah, 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 I'm coming to your defense. I'm going to say something. Whoa, 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 you know what? It could be. In other words, there is another explanation. It might be, why are you assuming the worst about her? Why don't we just believe the best? Now, let me tell you where you can practice this, a safe place to practice this. If you don't think you're any good at this, you don't want to try it at home, you know, the safest place to practice this is next time if you're a Republican, and when you're with all your Republican, nah, 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 the Democrats, or if you're a Democrat and nah, 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 the Republicans, and, you know, they're kind of getting their juices up, and just a good practice. You stop and say, well, you know what? There might be another explanation for that. What? I mean, you'll be ostracized. You may become an independent. I don't know. It may be difficult. But all I'm saying is this. That's a safe place to do that. You know, people start yakking around about a senator said or the vice president said, and just stop and say, well, you know, it could be. In other words, there may be an actual good reason these people do these things. It's unimaginable, I know, if you're looking across the alley of the person. But that's just a safe place to decide when you hear somebody yickety-yacking about somebody you know, that you step in and say, you know what? There may be another explanation. But at work, at home, what an incredible commitment to make. I promise you ahead of time, until the facts say otherwise, I'll come to your defense. The third decision that we made was this. If what I experience begins to erode my trust, I'll come directly to you. If what I experience begins to erode my trust, I mean, I'm just having a hard time doing this, I want you to know, I'm coming directly to you. Fourth one. And when I'm convinced I will not be able to deliver on a promise, I'll tell you ahead of time. When I realize I'm about to create a gap, my commitment to you is this, I'll tell you ahead of time. You're not gonna be sitting there going, oh, I'm gonna let you know. And the last one of our commitments was simply this. When you confront me about the gaps I've created, I will tell you the truth. When you confront me about the gaps I've created, I'm just telling you ahead of time. I'm going to tell you the truth. Now, let me just say this, because I know there's some extreme situations. I live in the world. Nobody calls the church to say, hey, things are going great. All right, just checking in. Okay, you know, that's not our world, okay? So I understand there's extreme situations. Now, let me just say this, okay? I'm telling you. Most people, and I mean most, like most people, want to be trusted. They do. When you look at someone and say, because you're at the end of your rope, you don't know what else to say, when you look at them, as I said a minute ago, when you look at them and say, I want to trust you, what the average person feels is, I want to be trustworthy. When you look at someone and they've created a gap a mile wide and you say, what can I do? What can we do so that I can trust you? And let me just tell you how powerful this is. Even if you are married to the worst of the worst, lying, cheating, he's got a motorcycle hidden somewhere, or she's got credit cards hidden somewhere, or she's written you, I mean, I'm telling you, if you're in the worst situation and you look at that person and you say, I want to trust you, that is the most direct route to discovering whether or not they really are trustworthy. Because the best way to discover whether or not someone's trustworthy is to trust them. The best way to turn somebody who's trustworthy into someone who's not trustworthy is not to trust them. That's the power of this word. And I think that's why Paul kind of was like, okay, how do I say this? Okay, they need to know. This is extreme. So here's how I want to wrap this up. I want to ask you a couple questions. Number one, if you're the kind of person who you just kind of have a difficult time trusting people in general, you have good reason. You know, again, something in your past, something in your childhood, something in a previous marriage, previous employer, you just have a hard time trusting people. I want to give you step one and how to overcome that right now, okay? And it's very simple. You can't do it here. And you think this is silly, but when you do this, when you try this, you're going to go, he's not such an idiot after all, okay? And here's what I want you to do, okay? At some point today, when you're alone, maybe in the car, maybe in the bathroom, you know, close the door in the bedroom, alone, if you feel like you know you're one of these people, you just have, generally speaking, you have a hard time trusting people. I want you to say this out loud three times. Out loud, because you've already thought it. You're thinking it right now. I want you to say out loud three times. There's no place like home. No, that's not it. Okay, I want you to say... And tap your heels together, okay? And hey, I want you to say this out loud. I have a hard time trusting people. I have a hard time trusting people. Oh my goodness. You mean all these gaps with all these people, because I think the world's just full of untrustworthy? You mean I have a hard time trusting people? And then you know what you can do? When you realize there's a gap and you realize, in general, I have a hard time trusting people, then I'm gonna bend and I'm gonna do what does not come natural to me and I'm gonna do what is not intuitive to me, because I got the power and I am going to choose to believe the best even though I have a hard time trusting people, because you do not have to decide based on your propensity toward trusting or not trusting. You have the power to put in this gap whatever you want to. Now, for the rest of us, You're a very trusting person. I mean, you trust strangers. You pick up hitchhikers. I mean, you're like the most trust. You trust just about everybody, but there's that one person. And she's related to you, or he's related to you, or it's that guy at work, or it's that coworker, and they're just shifty, and they're always whispering, and then they straighten up when you walk by. There's just something. You just don't trust them. There's always a gap. Here's my question for you, because if you're a Christian, we got to lean into this. What can you do to break that cycle of mistrust? What can you do? You go, well, I don't have to do anything. If they just act more trustworthy, quit looking at me that way, quit texting my girlfriend, quit sitting next to my wife, you know, whatever it is. If they, then I. Paul goes, no. Let me explain this again. Love believes all things, endures all things, hopes all things. Love bends. So here's my question. What can you do to break that cycle of mistrust between you and that other person? It may be a conversation. It may be time for that conversation where you sit down and say, look, this is awkward, but I want to trust you, and I'm struggling. And you know what? I don't care how evil they are. The phrase, I want to trust you, keeps the door open. And if there's any potential for hope, that's it. Now, if you forget all of this, which you probably will, and if you forget all about my cool stuff over here, and you forget about me, and you forget about church, and this whole day becomes a blur, let me summarize the whole thing with the brilliant insight that Jesus delivered to us about all relationships. When there's a gap, it's very simple. Do to others what you would have them do to you. When you create the gap, what do you want people to do? You want them to assume the best, believe the best. And so when you take the words of Paul and the words of Jesus and what Jesus said about confrontation, and you mix it all up, it's basically this simple. When there's a gap, you trust. When there's a gap, you trust. You bend, you extend to them not what they deserve. You extend to them exactly what you have chosen to extend to them, the gift of trust. And if you do, you'll be better. Your relationships will be better. The doors of relationship, even on the most difficult relationships, will stay open simply because you chose to trust. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, I know this lands in a lot of different places for us. And for some people, it's just general. They just have a generally difficult time trusting. I pray, Father, you would remind them today to get alone and to hear themselves say, I have a hard time trusting people. I have a hard time trusting people. I may be the problem. Father, for those of us, as we were listening, someone came to mind. And we could argue all day long, it's their fault, and it may be their fault. Would you give us the insight, the courage, the wisdom to know how to break that cycle if it can be broken? And in general, Father, I pray that we would all bend, that we would take Paul's words to heart, that we would bend, and that we would go out of our way and create the most generous explanation possible for the people who disappoint us. Father, again, just give each of us in the complex world of relationships the wisdom to know what to do, and then the courage to actually do it, because we believe application is what makes all the difference. In Jesus' name.